powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Oh.
We're on the air, Stacy.
What, Stacy, what's going on here?
I thought Curtis and I were communicating before, and I thought you were going to play a highlight. I'm going to play a highlight. In fact, I'll tell you what highlight I'm going to play. Let's go. Okay, Wild Card Weekend. It's already great. It's already fantastic. We have five plays to cover here, all very important plays from the weekend. We're going to start in Cincinnati, where the AFC North winning Bengals are trying to fend off the Raiders. You got about 17 seconds left in this game. Now, the Raiders can tie it with a touchdown. They can win it with a successful two-point conversion after that touchdown. The Bengals have not made the playoffs at this point, or have not won a playoff game since 1991. And who's their savior? It's not Joe Burrow. No, it's not Ja'Marr Chase. They had fantastic games. It's linebacker Jermaine Pratt.
Fourth and goal from the 9. Carr in the shotgun. Two receivers left, single man right. Here's the snap. Carr back to pass. Looking, fires, end zone! Intercepted! It was knocked away. The Bengals picked it off. It was Jermaine Pratt. He comes up with the INT. And on that play, 30 years of frustration are over. The Bengals have finally won a playoff game.
Now, the most frustrating part about all of this was the headline that Curtis has ready for us in about an hour. Wow, how dare
it's a good
you?
One.
It's a good one. Before we get to that, though, Jake, tell us about the Bengals' day against the Raiders.
Well, the Bengals' day against the Raiders, I thought it was very up and down. They didn't dominate the Raiders in a way that I thought that they are capable of doing. But this is also a very young team in a playoff environment for the first time. So they were able to control the game for the most part, and they were always in the lead. So that, to me, was a very positive sign when it comes to the Bengals, when it came to this particular matchup with the Raiders. But credit to the Raiders. I mean, they kept fighting. They kept battling back and really made a game out of this thing all the way down to the end. And I thought Derek Carr, you know, really did a good job putting his guys in position to win at the end of it. But on that last play that you just played, you went through all that effort. You're down this final two-minute drive, and you end it by totally just shutting your brain off and going to throw to somebody no matter what. No matter what. He was double covered, and he had plenty of time. He could have bought some more time and tried to extend the play a little bit more. And to me, that was something that I was just really bummed to watch on that play, just bad quarterback play to finish out your season by Derek Carr, who, you know, didn't have, like, ultimately a phenomenal, stellar game, but I thought he played a very solid football game and gave his team a chance to win it at the end. And just unfortunate to see that, but that's the difference between, you know, the Raiders, you know, being able to make it into the playoffs and being able to tie this thing up versus the Cincinnati Bengals being able to survive in advance. And I was really impressed with Joe Burrow, Stacy, really impressed with the quiet confidence of Joe Burrow throughout the game, and never seemed rattled, never seemed shaken about, you know, any adversity that they faced, and still found a way to get Ja'Marr Chase the football, that's for sure.
Now, it does make me wonder about Cincy's future in the AFC playoffs, given that the Raiders, a wild card team, had the best performance of any individual wild card team the 49ers actually won, but the Raiders outgained Cincinnati in pretty much every category. They had more first downs. They had more total plays. They had more total yards in rushing and in passing. I mean, the only area where they didn't excel was they weren't as effective in the red zone, but neither team was that great. Cincinnati 2 of 5 in the red zone. The Raiders 1 of 5. So, Raiders overall were solid on third down and so many other categories. It really just came down to that one play. It could have gone either way. So I'm curious to see what Cincinnati, who has this phenomenal connection. Joe Burrow, so fun to watch. The connection between him and Ja'Marr Chase is phenomenal. Ja'Marr Chase with 116 yards. I'm curious to see what they look like as they get deeper into the AFC postseason to see if they can hang with the big guns there. All right, next play here. You've got Josh Allen. Have yourself a day over the New England Patriots. He is 21 of 25, 308 yards, 5 touchdowns. A perfect game, pretty much, for the Buffalo Bills in that offense. This touchdown, a 34-yarder, is the longest of the day for Allen.
Allen pointing out Dante Hightower as the middle linebacker. Blitz is on. Allen with a pocket holding, launches deep, looking end zone, open target, caught! Emmanuel Sanders, touchdown Bills, a 34-yard strike, and it's 33-3.
The New England Patriots are the number two team in the regular season in limiting opposing offenses' yards per game. They allowed 482 from Buffalo in this one.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So you watch that matchup, and you just couldn't believe that the Buffalo Bills were just absolutely throttling New England. Now, New England, they obviously, you look back at this, and they've got a long way to go to be able to make themselves a team that's going to be a team that can hang with someone like Buffalo. I was surprised to see the defense struggle as much as they did against Josh Allen and this group. I mean, they've been, the New England Patriots have been one of the better defenses in the league all season long, have proven it time and time again, and have had success against the Buffalo Bills twice. So this was really surprising on that front. But I think that when you're talking about Buffalo, you're talking about Josh Allen, this is, when you're talking about full capabilities, it is incredible to see their ceiling, and it makes you feel like this is a team that it has the opportunity to absolutely get to a Super Bowl. And when I'm looking at Buffalo against Kansas City, I'm favoring Buffalo in this matchup against KC. The reason for that being is not necessarily because of Josh Allen, but it's because I think Buffalo's defense is significantly better than Kansas City's, and therefore I think Buffalo's going to do a better job against Patrick Mahomes than Kansas City's defense is going to do against Josh Allen.
All right, Jalen Hurts heading to Tampa Bay, where the NFC South winner hosting the wildcard Philadelphia Eagles. Jalen Hurts' story of the day was his two interceptions. Tampa Bay just takes advantage of a young quarterback in a Philly team that's still getting its legs under it as it tries to make itself a contender again. Tampa Bay wins this one pretty handedly, 31-15. It's never really in doubt, though, the Philadelphia Eagles getting those two touchdowns in the fourth. So for much of the game, it was pretty much a blowout. They try to make it a game, but Tom Brady, 29-37, 271, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. Now, the Eagles got to him. He was sacked 4 times. Didn't end up mattering, though. Here was one of his touchdowns, a 36-yarder to Mike Evans.
Tom Brady goes back to work. He'll throw on first down. Sets up in the pocket. Zips it to his left. Mike Evans has got it. Breaks one tackle along the sidelines. And then he flips it to the end zone. Touchdown, Tampa. On top, 30-0 with 5:18 to play here in the third quarter.
Here's what's interesting about Tom Brady's season, Jake, is Tom Brady last year, obviously they won the Super Bowl. This didn't end up mattering, but he had one of the biggest discrepancies between quarterback rating, passer rating, without pressure and with pressure, where with pressure, he was very human, very average. Without pressure, when he had great protection, he was absolutely phenomenal. This year, Tom Brady might be even better in pretty much any category. Like, he might very well get that MVP award from Aaron Rodgers with his season. And consider what I just said. He was sacked 4 times and still had a pretty phenomenal day.
Yeah, he did. And this was one where you just looked at Tampa Bay and they were just head and shoulders better than Philly. I mean, Philly didn't even look like they belonged on the same field as Tampa Bay. And this is a very balanced team. So when you talk about a potential matchup of Tampa Bay and Green Bay down the road, these are two very, very balanced football teams. Great defenses, very balanced attack that is heavy towards the passing game and leaning on their quarterbacks and Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. But this is one where, Stacey, I have to admit, I was hyping up the injuries a little bit for Tampa Bay and concerned about how they were going to overcome them. They're not as injured on the defensive side like I thought they were through the year. They've gotten healthier. They've got Shaquille Barrett back. They've got most of their defense intact, and they looked absolutely stellar on defense. And if their defense can continue to have the impact that they had against the Eagles, the Tampa Bay is just as much of a contender as Green Bay in the NFC. So I was very impressed from what I saw against what I saw from the Buccaneers.
Let's talk about the game that everyone's talking about today, 49ers versus Cowboys. Cowboys hosting the wild card 49ers. And there's plenty to talk about. A great day from Deebo Samuel, who had over 100 yards from scrimmage. But the one play people are talking about, it's not a touchdown. It's not an interception. It's not really much of anything. It's the final couple seconds. Take a listen.
They work from the San Francisco 40. Prescott takes the shotgun snap. He's going to run around left guard. Prescott slides inside the 25, but there's 8 seconds left and counting. They scurry up to the line of scrimmage, down to two, down to one. It's down to zeros. What will they say here? San Francisco onto the field with the coaching staff and the sideline players. They think it's over. The San Francisco 49ers have punched their ticket to the divisional round of the NFC playoffs.
That was the final. It starts with the final 14 seconds. No timeouts for either team. Dak Prescott runs down the middle. It's a quarterback draw, 17-yard gain. Any other play of the game, that's phenomenal. It converts for them, 17 yards on the ground, catches them off guard. Oh, here's the problem. Pretty much everything after that is completely bumbled.
Yeah, it is. It's brutal. And the Cowboys had the opportunity to win this game. They had the opportunity in front of them, not just in that drive, but the drive before, and they couldn't get it done when they were in pretty good position to do so. But I want to credit the 49ers for going into Dallas, into their building, and being able to take over the game. I mean, it was really impressive to watch them be able to control the line of scrimmage, be able to get out to an early lead, and that was all the difference, because Dallas, they did make a comeback in, out of it in the fourth quarter. Stacey, they scored 16 points, and still it wasn't enough to overtake the 49ers. So the Cowboys just continued to make a series of errors when it came to pre-snap penalties, bailing out the 49ers, and then ultimately, you know, when it mattered the most, Dak Prescott not having the situational awareness of handing the ball to the referee instead of handing it to a center, and that's what cost them the ability to have one final play.
Last highlight here, it's Chiefs versus Steelers at Arrowhead, Kansas City, the number two seed in the AFC, hosting the Steelers, who get in because the Raiders end up beating the Chargers, so kind of fall backwards in there. Now, it's a phenomenal day for T.J. Watt, who continues to just be an absolute nightmare for opposing quarterbacks, opposing offenses. The Steelers' defense gets a scoop and score. It looks a little shaky for the Chiefs early, but it doesn't matter. They end up pulling this one out. It ends up being a blowout. Ben Roethlisberger's career ends not with a bang, but with a whimper, and it's unfortunate, you know, that it ends, you know, with this complete dominating performance by the Chiefs. But you know, let's just take a listen, anyways. 31-yard touchdown pass from Mahomes to Tyreek Hill.
Second 12, shotgun snap, goes back three, winds up, arching spiral pass down the far side, over the shoulder catch, pylon, goal line, touchdown, Hill. A 31-yard strike. Mahomes right on the screws. And the Chiefs have scored 34 unanswered and take a lead over the Pittsburgh Steelers midway through the third quarter, 34-7.
Jake, we only have a minute left, so rather than a recap of this game, here's what I'm most curious about. Which team is the better opponent or better competitor here between the Chiefs and the Bills? I mean, I know the Titans are the number one seed, but I'm looking at these two teams as potentially upsetting and moving on.
Yeah, I do view that the Tennessee Titans, they have a recipe for success, and ultimately we'll see if they are the true number one seed. But I'm with you. The two teams that you're looking at as the real contenders for the Super Bowl isn't the Titans. It's Bills and Kansas City, and they're going to face off in the divisional round this next
yep.
week. So you're going to have an exciting matchup there. But right now, I really, really like the Bills in this one. And it's not just because they had a perfect offensive performance against the Patriots this last week. But when you talk about the ceilings of these two teams, the Bills are the more well-rounded team. They have a great defense to match the offensive output of what Josh Allen can do. Ultimately, it's going to come down to whether or not Josh Allen can play really, really good, clean football in that one. And Patrick Mahomes, he's going to have to put together a Herculean effort in order for Kansas City to win, in my opinion, just because I think that it is there is a stark difference between the defenses of both of these teams, and that's why I think the Bills are a better contender than the Kansas City Chiefs are.
Speaking of the divisional round, as Jake mentioned, the Bills and Chiefs are going to face off Sunday. You've got the Bengals and Titans Saturday. You've got the 49ers heading to Lambeau to take on the Packers on Saturday as well. Your other Sunday game is going to be the Buccaneers hosting whichever team wins between tonight's Monday night wildcard matchup between the Rams and Cardinals. All right, that'll do it for plays of the game from wildcard weekend. Let's get to four down territory.
This is four down territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
First down, Ian Rappaport and Chris Mortensen had their own reports regarding the current state of the Seahawks. Which one should you pay more attention to?
The report that you should pay more attention to is Chris Mortensen, who Chris Mortensen came out and said definitively from a very close source high up, and I wonder who that could be, that the meeting between Pete Carroll, John Schneider, Jody Allen was not in terms of talking about jobs. It was talking about end of the year, and that all three, Pete Carroll, John Schneider, Russell Wilson, are set to come back here in 2022, and that is the overall takeaway. So when you talk about clarity, you talk about, you know, wanting a firm answer in terms of the direction of where the organization is going. I think Chris Mortensen provided that. Ian Rappaport putting out there that Russell Wilson wants to explore his options. One, that doesn't happen in the NFL. That's not the way the NFL works. Russell Wilson's under contract for 2 years. There's nothing to explore unless Russell Wilson was to firmly ask for a trade, which has not happened. There's been no new developments there on any front. And I talked to Russell Wilson personally in you know, just talking about his offseason, what he's planning to do, how excited he is, continuing to rehab, continuing the work, and already getting started right away, taking no breaks, you know, from the season to the offseason. You know, he is excited about what the Seahawks have the ability to do, and he is focused on that, and that's all that needs to be reported.
Second down. Which playoff team impressed you the most over the weekend?
The team that impressed me the most over the weekend has to be the Buffalo Bills. I mean, a perfect offensive game. No punts, no turnovers on downs, nothing. I mean, every single drive that you had, you went down and scored a touchdown. It's unbelievable. It's unheard of. Josh Allen was sensational in this game. They also were able to rack up 174 yards on the ground. I mean, just absolutely filleted the New England Patriots, who were the number two ranked defense going in to the playoffs. I mean, just a very impressive performance from the Buffalo Bills overall. This is a group that if they can play at a high level, if Josh Allen and this offense can play at a high level, they have the defense to really, really separate themselves from everyone else in the league and everyone else in the AFC, I should say. And that was the team that really, really impressed me.
Third down. You were seriously doubting the Bucs' Super Bowl chances heading into the weekend, Jake. Do you feel the same after watching them dismantle the Eagles?
I mean, the reason why I felt skeptical was because of all the injuries that they have sustained. And that, to me, is something that's hard to overcome. Even when you get guys back, it's hard to expect that they're going to perform at a high level right out of the gate. Well, guess what, Stacey? That's exactly what they did. They got back key starters, and they looked like a total, complete team. Being able to get it done through the air, being able to control the line of scrimmage defensively. The Bucs looked like a group that dominated the playoffs all through last year. They looked sensational. So I know the Eagles really struggled in this game, and it's hard to, you know, really, really say definitively that the Bucs are a Super Bowl team just based off of one game against Philly. But Tampa, just the body of work that they've had, knowing Tom Brady, knowing how this, the recipe of how this defense was able to help them win a championship a year ago through the playoff performance, I mean, my goodness, I think that they're totally set up to be able to get themselves back into the NFC Championship game and to be able to face off most likely with Green Bay again to have a chance to get back to the Super Bowl. So I shouldn't have been as down as I was against Tampa Bay. I was wrong. I'm sorry, but I can admit it.
Fourth down. All right, what should be the Seahawks' biggest takeaway after watching the games over Wild Card Weekend?
The biggest takeaway that they should have is in my mind, clearly what we've been talking about over and over and over again, which is you have to eventually turn your resources into the trenches, into the offense and defensive line. If you want to have a roster that if your star players play at their best, they're a Super Bowl caliber team. Unfortunately, for the last few years, they have put together a roster that has, when their star players have played at their best, they are a playoff team. They are the Eagles. They are the Steelers. They are the Raiders. That's the type of team that they are when they enter the playoffs. One and done. They are not. They have not been a legitimate Super Bowl contender. The difference between the have and the have-nots, the top seeds and everyone else in the playoffs, has been the play in the trenches, the offense and defensive line, and how that's allowed, how that's helped elevate everyone else around them. And that, to me, should be the overall takeaway. Plenty of opportunity to be able to get that done this offseason.
All right, don't forget, you can watch the show live on 710sports.com/video. Someone watching saying, Jake looks like a senior in high school about to coach his brother's Little League game. I think it's fair.
How dare you?
I don't know. I think that's good.
That's not fair at all, Stacey, okay?
Well, someone also said I look like I'm getting ready for a lunch date at REI. So, I mean, to each his own.
Get some rock climbing in.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I'm going to go up going, hey, you have any $900 sleeping bags I could check out here?
Look, holy smokes. They're comfy, though. That's the most important
thing. Have you touched one of those sleeping bags before?
Sure. I mean, I've never, like, slept in one of them, but, like, you run your hand against it, and it's like, oh, man.
They're like,
I bet that's, like,
get
sleeping
away from
on a cloud. Yeah. Some security guard escorts me away, like, you're too poor to buy that, sir.
I'm sorry. Like, you've right, seen your W-2 when you walked in here, and you actually can't shop in this section. You need to leave. That's exactly what it would be. I hate it. I hate it. Okay. Coming up in the timeline, Dak Prescott changed his tune about fans throwing garbage on the AT&T Stadium field when he found out who it was directed at. That's next.
This is the timeline
with Jake and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
This is the timeline with Jake and Stacey. This hour brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. We are telling you what you might have missed in the world of sports because, well, here's why it showed up on your timeline, I'm guessing. We're actually going to start with the game preceding the wild card matchup between the 49ers and Dallas Cowboys. Troy Aikman. He's on the Bucks-Eagles blowout right now, and as part of this conversation, clearly wishes he was literally anywhere else, maybe one place in particular, except for here.
That game coming up, which is on CBS, which is the Dallas Cowboys hosting the San Francisco 49ers. We saw San Francisco with that overtime win in L.A. last weekend. That's going to be a good game.
It's going to be a great game. A really good game. I think there's a lot of people that like to be calling that game. But should be a lot of fun.
Now, they had Romo on the call for color commentary.
They sure did.
Is there a world where the Cowboys, just for like a major game, don't have a former Cowboy being on the call?
Yeah, like, that's part of the CBA negotiations.
I guess. Yeah. They were like, so here's the rule. Only former Dallas Cowboys can be on these games. It's just for to ensure fairness.
Yeah, and apparently there is a quarterback war that's going on to fight over who can call these Cowboys games. I mean, could it be any more obnoxious? Troy Aikman, once again, clearly outlines himself as to why he is an enemy of the show.
Jake.
And look, call the game that you're at and be happy about it, Troy, all right?
I think Troy's just kidding around, you guys. Like, I think he's being a little facetious, just a little bit.
I don't think he's kidding at all.
You think he's very serious?
I think he is very serious.
Game right now. I would rather be calling the Cowboys game.
Did you go back and listen to Joe Buck's laugh again? This is an uncomfortable laugh. This isn't a playful laugh. This is an uncomfortable laugh.
Let me play it one more time.
That
play
game coming up, which is on CBS, which is the Dallas Cowboys hosting the San Francisco 49ers. We saw San Francisco with that overtime win in L.A. last weekend. That's going to be a good game.
It's going to be a great game. A really good game. I think there's a lot of people that like to be calling that game. But should be a lot of fun.
Okay, yeah, that's an uncomfortable
that's
laugh.
I've
made many of them before. But I think that, is this because he's mad it was Romo on the call or a different network? Or is it you know, that they're just at a blowout that feels boring. Because on second thought, I might have liked to hear Troy Aikman's response to the final seconds of that game.
I think Aikman knew that the Bucks-Eagles game was going to be a blowout and was like, I don't want to call this game. I want to call a game that's going to be competitive.
I mean,
and,
he's
and
right.
Down to the wire.
49ers and Cowboys was competitive. It was just competitive for the most stupid reasons. Both teams kept shooting themselves in the foot.
And Troy would have had plenty to say about it. There's no doubt about that versus Tony Romo. I agree with you, Stacey. I ultimately probably would have rather heard Troy's take on it because he doesn't hold back sometimes. But still, like, I don't care. I don't care. And, you know, anybody that sits there and wonders, you know, whether Troy, you know, has preferences or anything like that, well, he just told you very clear cut that, he'd rather call that Cowboy game.
Well, speaking of that Cowboys game, after the final seconds, when the ref went to spot the ball, time runs out, 49ers win, it's a little bit weird, everyone's kind of confused. Players are walking off the field, and Cowboys fans start throwing garbage and bottles out onto the AT&T Stadium field. Dak Prescott changes his tune when talking about fans throwing garbage when he found out who it was directed at.
To know everything that we put into this day in and day out, try our hardest. Nobody comes in the game wanting or expecting to lose. And for people to react that way when you're supposed to be a supporter and be with us through thick and thin, that's tough.
I think they were aiming at the referees.
Yeah, they were at the referees.
Well, credit to them then.
It's actually kind of funny. But that being said, you know, I don't mind it. It's objectively funny to me the way he ends it. You know, just the quick curse is, oh, well, you know, hey, you know, I take it all back then. You know, good on them. But also, you kind of earned that one, Cowboys. I don't care. You bumbled your way to that ending. I know that everything looked weird and awkward with the ref, and it looked very – it was a comedy of errors the entire game, fitting that it ended that way. It looked like it could have – you could have made the argument that the ref should have spotted the ball more quickly, but ultimately that's on Dallas.
Yeah, it is on Dallas. And look, the referee is sprinting, okay? He's from behind, okay? He is sprinting trying to get to the ball, and then not only – is he trying to get to the ball, but the offensive line has already got set in their spots. They're already lined up. And the only way for the referee to get to the ball quick enough, because Dak didn't hand it to him, is he's got to run through some offensive linemen, reach. I mean, I feel bad for the guy. He had to, like, lean over the top of the offensive linemen over their backs to try and move the ball and then get out of the way. I mean, it just, yeah, it was awful looking, but it was not on the refs. It was not on the refs in that case.
Now, we're going to be getting to this in NFL headlines, so we don't need to talk about it too much right now, but Kellen Moore and Mike McCarthy both kind of they defended the quarterback draw by also saying that there was enough time to get the ball spotted.
Sure, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, look, if you want to call that, again, like I said before and went in depth on this, if you want to call that, that's fine. But you've got to determine how much yardage is good yardage. It can't be go until you think that you're about to get touched. 17 yards wasn't necessary. Getting the first down, advancing it maybe 10 more yards was necessary. And that, to me, is where they went wrong. They did not have enough time. Clearly, they didn't have enough time, and it wasn't executed. You made it way too close, and if they would have went after 10 yards rather than 17 yards, they probably get that ball off. They're able to clock it, and they're able to get another shot at the end zone.
Next story here in the timeline, if you're seeing Ryan Fitzpatrick trending, well, no, it's not because he was playing in any game. No, absolutely not. It's because he was shirtless in attendance at a game, not just any game. It was the Bills-Patriots game where the temperature was, what was it, -7 degrees? Or 7 degrees. It was one of the two. It sounds abysmal. And he was there shirtless, taking photos with fans, cheering people on. And you know what? I'm convinced part of the reason that the Bills won. You can't convince me otherwise.
Fitzmagic. Fitzmagic was there in the stands. Also, it's just the dad bod is strong with Ryan Fitzpatrick, right? I mean, you're talking about, you know, what it could look like with Ryan Fitzpatrick at the water park, you know, that water park, infamous water park that was reported on, that's where he injured his hip. I mean, look, this has got some strong dad bod vibes going on from Ryan Fitzpatrick. And is he still under contract with Washington right now?
I think he signed a 1-year deal with Washington. Okay. So maybe he becomes a free agent as soon as the season ends, but yeah, kind of odd to see somebody that is still kind of with a team,
yeah,
rooting on another, and not just rooting, but like going all out, shirtless in sub-zero temperatures. Ryan Fitzpatrick, best quarterback if we're grading off vibes. Like, oh, if you want to hang out with him, I think he'd be a good hang.
No, oh, he's an amazing hang, let me tell you. I mean, being around him, it was awesome being around Ryan Fitzpatrick my rookie year. He was an amazing teacher, was super fun to watch, and he's just a guy that brings everybody together. He's just got his own unique way of being able to do it, doesn't try to force it. It's just got a super fun personality that everybody likes to be around.
Now, how would you guys feel if a Seahawks player set to be a free agent, though still technically a player, was cheering on another NFL team? Like, let's say Quandre Diggs is, like, at the Eagles game cheering on the Eagles.
Look, I mean, here's the thing. If that individual, Ryan Fitzpatrick's first major contract, like big-time contract, came with the Bills. His first success, like true success in the league, came with the Bills. So clearly there's some connection, there's some love there with Buffalo, and if it was like that with anybody else, I mean, I wouldn't have any major issue. It's not like Ryan Fitzpatrick at this stage of his career is, you know, truly attached to any one organization. This is a hitman now, Stacey. He is a 1-year hitman in terms of NFL quarterbacks, and whoever wants to bring him on for a year to maybe be their starter or to be a, you know, solid backup, that's what he is. So the Bills is the only organization that I think he really truly has any like real deep ties with.
I feel like from now on, Ryan Fitzpatrick is the mark of a team that's transitioning to being a contender.
Have to be your starting quarterback.
That's exactly right. Where a team has all the pieces, like they've got a great young promising defense, they've got some great weapons, and they're just kind of waiting to get the quarterback, but they haven't found him yet. So they're like, let's bring in Ryan Fitzpatrick. And let's see if the talent around him is enough to just, like, actually make a postseason run. Like, it's the mark of a team that's, like, that thinks it's pretty close to contending, you know?
Really good observation from Doug in Tacoma, the 253. He said, Fitzpatrick was shirtless. I could have sworn he had a sweater on. Now, he's got a pretty thick pelt of chest hair going. So that's why Doug thought he had a sweater going. But Ryan Fitzpatrick, a very, very hairy man.
All right, don't forget, you can listen to us on the go or catch up with the show if you miss it. Subscribe to the Jake and Stacey podcast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. And you guys, please, please, please don't forget to rate and leave a review if you do subscribe. Thank you from all of us. And by the way, we said the Seahawks are still several pieces removed from being a true Super Bowl contender. So what are those pieces? Why do they matter? And the most important one, can Seattle find them this offseason? That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
All right, well, we know the Titans and Packers are advancing. They're already the number one seed. Didn't even have to play Wild Card Weekend. And the Wild Card winners, you've got the Bills, the Chiefs, the top teams in the AFC. The Bucks are going to advance. We're going to see what the outcome is between the Rams and Cardinals game tonight, but you can see the cream of the crop rising, that the best teams are far and away better than the rest of the NFL. You had teams like the Eagles or the Raiders, who are actually pretty decent on Saturday, or, you know, I don't know, teams that were lower seeds in here, the Steelers, that just clearly had some major flaws. We're trying to figure out where exactly Seattle falls in between those two groups. I mean, they aren't really the cream of the crop. It's kind of hard to say that after the season they had. But they also look like they can hang with the Eagles, and they look like they could hang with the Steelers, and look like they could hang with the Pats, who were contenders this year, got into the postseason, but didn't make much of a splash. So if we're going to say, look, they could be in the playoffs, but how do they become a true Super Bowl contender? If we're saying they aren't there yet, then Jake, what are the pieces they need? Why do they matter? And most importantly, can Seattle find them this offseason?
Yeah, they can absolutely find them this offseason. That is, if you're wanting to be excited about what the Seahawks can do and how they can move forward, they absolutely can find them. Now, the difference is this is not a deep, deep group when it comes to pass rush, when it comes to offensive line help, unlike the year prior. When it came down to that conversation and when it came to, offensive line, 2020, when it came to your, defensive line and pass rushers. So this isn't a deep group, but there are guys at the top that absolutely can help you. And number one, I would put on that list in terms of pass rushers, Chandler Jones. I am going to scream it from the rooftops. I want Chandler Jones as a Seattle Seahawk this next offseason. Chandler Jones, although older, is a proven impact blue chip pass rusher who can affect the game. Could you imagine Chandler Jones and Daryl Taylor on either side of the ball? That is legit pass rush. Also followed up by Carlos Dunlap being the next guy in line to be able to add to that pass rush, because you're only going to save, around $900,000 if you do cut Carlos Dunlap. There's not really a point to do so. To me, that would be a tremendous group, and that would add some legitimate help with Chandler Jones. The other one that I would say is Akeem Hicks as an interior defense pass rusher, Stacey. You add those two guys, and all of a sudden your defensive line looks significantly better. It looks like a championship caliber defensive line paired with Puna Ford and Daryl Taylor, and then, followed by the depth pieces that you have at that point. And then lastly, what I would say, Stacey, is the other thing that I would go after is the center position. From there, you could figure out the rest of the market, but getting a good quality center, either Ryan Jensen, my personal favorite would be Jason Kelce from the Eagles. I have a hard time seeing the Eagles let Kelce go away because he's been such a fan favorite for so long, Stacey, but he's 34 years old. He's still playing at an unbelievable level, but getting a center to complement what you've added with Gabe Jackson, Damian Lewis, bring back Dwayne Brown, I think that would be a tremendous addition to your offensive line.
Yeah, I'll go back to the pass rush and say they absolutely need to add an edge rusher. Absolutely. You had Carlos Dunlap that had, I think, 7.5, 8.5 sacks for the team this season. And obviously you hope that he can replicate some of that success with you, but I don't know that you can necessarily count on an older player doing that for you year in and year out. And you could see that the Seahawks weren't sure that they could do that. I mean, they chose to limit those snaps. Carlos Dunlap wasn't necessarily injured at the time, so they decided at the time that other personnel that they had might help them more in whatever advantage that they wanted to get defensively. And then after him, you had 6.5 apiece for Daryl Taylor and Rashim Green. Rashim Green is set to be a free agent. We spoke with ESPN's Brady Henderson, who said, low-key, if there is one free agent that seems like a likely candidate to move on or a long shot to sign back, it could be Rashim Green, because he was drafted so young by Seattle. You rarely have 24-year-old pass rushers hitting free agency that are coming off some pretty, reliable performances. I mean, he isn't the top name, and for a while people were throwing it around as a joke, that he just didn't produce for you. But, I mean, he's been pretty solid for you. So if you don't have him coming back, you have Daryl Taylor and you have Carlos Dunlap. And who else? You know what I mean?
Well,
I mean,
you have Benson Mayo and Kerry Hyder on your
car.
But that's not good enough. Right? You don't need journeymen to try and maximize and get the most out of them. You need to change, and you need to get top-tier talent. You need to get premier talent on the edge to be able to make a difference, and that's why I think Chandler Jones and Akeem Hicks would be two tremendous additions. Another name that you could throw out there, I'm going to throw a couple names out here, Stacey. Harold Landry from the Tennessee Titans, he'll be available. He'll be on the market. Von Miller is another guy that could be on the market again. I mean, LA is going to do whatever they can to re-sign him, obviously. But he could hit the market if he's wanting, more than what they are asking for. And here's an old name that could get back on the market. Frank Clark. Frank Clark, the Chiefs could save over $12 million this year by cutting Frank Clark, and he's somebody that could be on the market again. And not to mention that Jadeveon Clowney forever will be a one-year free agent potential signing that you could bring back. So plenty of opportunity for them to upgrade and to get better on the edge.
Yeah, when I look at some of the best teams, you've got the Bills is the number one defense. The Bucks and Chiefs, with the Chiefs in particular, like not a top defense. They gave up a ton of yards, but have some pretty solid defensive linemen. Chris Jones, obviously Frank Clark. And they have questions at defensive back with a guy like Daniel Sorensen, but they also have like stars there. So they have kind of, it like runs the board, and really the strength of their team is going to be their offense. Like they're going to try to drop 40 points on you, not try to limit you to 10 per se. But then you've got other teams, like for the most part, these teams are really strong in the trenches. And they've got enough stars scattered throughout because, unfortunately for Seattle, a couple of these teams have also racked up those draft picks. But, I mean, so I don't know that you could go get, like, a Vita Vea in the draft. In fact, you can't. Like, you cannot do that. But, like you said, if you're talking about what you can do this year, I like your point about saying you could get a free agent. Like, if you can't get a top pass rusher, well, who's hitting free agency, right? For offensive line help, I do wonder if you turn to the draft for some help there. I do wonder if you start pulling that in because you don't really have a plan of succession after Dwayne Brown.
Correct.
What are you going to do? You have Stone Forsythe?
No, you can. And that's why I think that Dwayne Brown's absolutely going to come back. I very much view that the way that Pete Carroll talked about Dwayne Brown, you know, to end the season after the season. I just don't see anything else other than that happening. So I do believe that you're going to see Dwayne Brown back. And that's where I would love to see them add at the center position. I'd love to see them upgrade the right tackle position if they could, to add legitimate competition to what Jake Curran did. And to, you know, see what they could do to upgrade at the position when you're dealing with so many premier edge rushers in the NFC in particular, Stacey. So to me, the trenches is where the offensive line, the defensive line is the area that you can get better. And that would be, if I had a dream offseason for outside of the draft, because we haven't really gotten into the draft and the names that are there and the potential that's there for them to improve. And that's certainly an area where they can address some of these positions, Stacey. But just in terms of free agents, Chandler Jones, Akeem Hicks, Jason Kelce, those three names, if they were able to land those three guys, this group would be significantly better.
So secondary question, if they add an elite pass rusher, let's say in free agency, if they add offensive line help in the draft and hit free agency for a center or right tackle, let's say they upgrade the trenches, is that enough to make them a Super Bowl team? Like a true Super Bowl contender, is that enough? I don't know.
I believe so. I believe that it is. I mean, I think it is. I believe that it is. And obviously it goes back to whether or not at running back you are stable enough. It's all dependent on, look, if you bring back Rashad Penny, and does Penny stay healthy for the majority of the year? Is he healthy for the playoffs? Do they have a stable running game? And that's something that they always have run into trouble. But I do believe that those two areas absolutely make them a team that is significantly better. It makes their ceiling much, much higher, in my opinion. Stacey, I know you disagree, so we're going to have to get back to this because I want to hear why you disagree.
Yeah, we'll get back to this when we get into 12:45, and then one when we're taking your calls, we'll jump back to this same question. Coming up next, we play What Caught My Eye after every single Seahawks game. Obviously, Seahawks didn't play over Wild Card Weekend, but we were still watching these games closely. So what caught our eye from Wild Card Weekend? That's next.